May a regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state? The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Sean Carana from Florida Carry here in just a moment or two. Can't believe I've never had Sean on the program, which is I feel kind of embarrassed by that. But great conversation. Breaking some news here because Florida Carry filing two lawsuits. Actually, one filed today. One is coming up in the next couple of days. And Sean spoke about both of those lawsuits and more during this conversation over the efforts to get Florida cities and counties to comply with Florida law and what happens when these political subdivisions refuse to do so. Take a look and a listen. Sean, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to talk to you, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's I guess this has been a long time coming.
It has been. And, you know, listen, I mean, first off, thank you for all of the work that Florida Carry is doing. You guys are doing a fantastic job and holding politicians' feet to the fire, holding, you know, cities accountable and counties accountable for their actions. And I mean, really, you guys are just doing a tremendous, tremendous job down there.
It can be thankless at times, but it's also very rewarding in that, you know, we get to do a lot of the work that just others aren't willing to, that really needs to get done for the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
We have an amazing all volunteer crew at Florida Carry, between our board members, our region leads, and just down to the individual volunteers that go out and just every day are making a difference for perfecting the right to bear arms in Florida.
So one of the things that you guys have done recently, and I know this isn't the first time you've done this, but you've sent out you found a number of localities that are not in compliance with Florida's preemption law, right? And I'm curious, I mean, did you find out about some of these things because of Florida Carry members saying, hey, I just noticed this going on where I live? Is that how you found out about some of these things?
Oh, absolutely. We have members who will reach out to us. Often it's things like a picture of a no gun sign in a park or on a city building, places where they know are not prohibited places. And so we'll dig into that. And before we send a letter to a city or county saying, hey, you've got this, it's a violation of preemption, we want to clear this up. We'll also look into what ordinances or rules or, you know, what they've published to make sure that we're complete and can help them to get them into compliance as quickly and efficiently as possible. And most of the time that works great.
I was going to say, most of the time this doesn't lead to litigation. Might lead to some, I don't want to say hurt feelings, but maybe some political embarrassment that, you know, okay, we got to do this. But
honestly, we do it very quietly usually. We don't send out press release every time we tell a city or county that, hey, you're violating preemption. Please come back into compliance. We send them a letter that, you know, says, hey, we want to help you follow the law. And if they don't, then we have courts that will help them to follow the law. And we hate it when it has to get there, but it too often has to get there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, absolutely. Listen, litigation is expensive. And it's expensive for both sides, right? I mean, the taxpayers end up footing the bill for a losing cause. Gun owners and, you know, Second Amendment supporters, they end up having to pony up the legal cost to get these cities to comply with the law. Yeah, it's much better to get it done, you know, just through a vote of the county commissioners or the city council. To that end, you guys recently sent out a little more than a dozen notices to various political subdivisions. What's been the rate of compliance with that most recent batch, Sean?
Probably over 90%. Really there's, you know, there's been a little back and forth with one or two saying, hey, we don't think this is really a violation. They have to get some education, on the differences in the types of preemption. There is a conflict preemption, which allows for co-regulation of certain things. That's not what we have in Florida. We have express field preemption. And what that means is a city or county is completely without the authority to regulate the right to bear arms. So we have the field preemption provided by the statute and by the Florida Constitution, which says that the manner of bearing arms may only be regulated by law. That means statutes, not ordinances. So only state law can regulate the bearing of arms. And there's a lot of cities and counties who don't like that very much. And well, like it or not, it's the law.
That's right. And it's interesting because, I wrote about this recently. I think it was Alachua County. One of the things that you said, and you sent out a letter, it got picked up by the media somehow. So I guess maybe a county official, took this to the media. But one of the ordinances in question bars carry at courthouses. Now, this is also regulated under state statute, but like you said, under field preemption, it doesn't matter if the local ordinance mirrors state law, that local ordinance is not allowed to exist. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And their ordinance doesn't really even mirror the state law. It goes okay. Beyond it. In a courthouse, or in a courtroom, a judge can say whether or not you're allowed to carry in the courtroom, which necessarily means you have to be able to go through the courthouse. So if you have a judge who says, hey, expert witness for Florida carry, you're authorized to carry concealed in my courtroom, I'm fine with it. But the county says no. Well, now they're overriding the independence of the judiciary and getting into an area that they're not allowed to regulate. So that's a violation of the preemption. So, I know there was some confusion about calling out the county's laws over, or the county's ordinances rather, over the placement of signs, no gun signs at the courthouse and everything.
Yeah.
And well-intentioned or not, that's not within their authority to do. Now, whether what the judges or the chief judge wants to do, that's a completely different matter.
Okay. And from what I understand, Alachua County is going to address this at their county commissioner meeting in August. Now, you said 90%+ compliance. What about the 10% or so who have not responded appropriately to these demand letters?
Well, I can tell you a tale of two cities.
Okay.
The city of Maitland just got back to us yesterday, saying, "Whoops, yep, we're not going to enforce any of these ordinances. We'll make sure that there's no signs remaining in any of our parks, and we're putting it on the commission docket to have these repealed." And thank you for contacting us and letting us know that we had this problem, and thank you for your professionalism, and we're happy to comply. And then you had the city of St. Augustine. They've put up no gun signs on, I think, just about every city-owned building they can get their hands on, including the visitor center in the historic downtown tourist district. So millions of Floridians carry day to day to protect themselves and their families. And the visitor center, which is the only public bathrooms near where you can park to get into the historic district of St. Augustine, decided to put up no gun signs and keep people out of these city buildings and at the city hall and where people have all kinds of business. All manner of facilities there in the city put up these no gun signs. So we contacted them. And their city attorney got back to us wanting to, I think, litigate the issue via email, and actually informed some of our members who contacted them before bringing it to our attention of what this particular attorney thought the law meant, and completely mischaracterized the law. They tried to basically claim to be some kind of private property owner that could make sure that no one ever has a gun on their property. And it's supported by a law that had they tried to say that their gun ban is supported by the law that makes it illegal for an employer to keep guns out of the parking lot. So, bad advice of counsel is not a defense to a preemption lawsuit in Florida. This morning, we filed the lawsuit against the city of St. Augustine. So it will be interesting to see their response. These things, unfortunately, usually take years to get to fruition. And it's going to wind up costing the taxpayers of St. Augustine more than likely hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorney's fees on both sides. They're going to have to be paying their own attorneys. They're going to have to be paying our attorneys. And the individuals responsible will wind up with some civil fines, likely.
I mean, that's what the law allows in Florida. And I guess, if the city attorney wanted to litigate via email, well, now he gets to litigate in a court. I would encourage St. Augustine residents, go to your city council meeting. Tell your city council members, hey, this is a losing fight. I don't want to be on the hook for this. Let's go ahead and settle this, change the signage, do what needs to be done to get the city in compliance with state law. I'm curious as well. We've seen Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer sent out a number of similar letters to localities. Does it help when the state gets involved, when the attorney general, if he were to, write a letter to St. Augustine officials saying, hey, you're not in compliance with state law, does that kind of light a fire under officials, or does it make them dig in their heels?
Oh, absolutely. It helps. For the past 16 years of Florida Cary's existence, we've been asking, our state attorneys general to get involved, come protect the right to bear arms, stop defending laws that you know are unconstitutional. But in fact, the entire reason that our preemption statute has the provision so that a membership organization like Florida Cary can actually go out and prosecute these cases is because the attorney general in 2011, when we amended to put teeth into our preemption law, just said, well, I'm busy dealing with criminals. Why don't we, we wanted the attorney general to go out and enforce this. They came back and said, well, I'm busy dealing with criminals. Florida Cary, why don't you enforce this and we'll make it a private right of action? So that's what we've done. But all this time we have asked, there are certain things that we can't get in, go out and enforce, because, frankly, the preemption needs to be even stronger. Yeah. We've tried to work with the legislature to get some fixes in, but of course, anytime you get into the political sphere,
we could do a whole hour on the floor.
It's a hard business, right? So sometimes we have more friendly leadership in the legislature, and sometimes we don't. Right. So we'll see how our incoming class treats us.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of the attorney general, go ahead.
Yeah. But with Attorney General Uthmeyer, it's been a sea change. He's actually out there respecting the right to bear arms. He's holding cities accountable. He's when he gets reports of the types of things that we get reports of, a illegal no gun sign in a park or at a public facility, he's been reaching out on his own. And that's something we've never seen from AG before. And of course, as scared of litigation as some of these jurisdictions are from us, they're way more scared of the attorney general because he has a lot more power.
Well, one of the things that one of the cities that Attorney General Uthmeyer has been investigating is city of Jacksonville. They had, and as you all are aware, they had this gun registry in place for about 18 months or so, right? Every gun owner who went to City Hall had to write down their name, had to write down the gun that they were carrying, make and model. This clearly violates state law. Supposedly, when the powers that be found out about it, they put a stop to it right away. Attorney General Uthmeyer said, we're going to investigate here. And I think has announced that he's filing a civil lawsuit. Can we break some more news here on Cam and Company, Sean? What's Florida Cary doing with Jacksonville?
Certainly. So the person who reported the issue in the first place is a Florida Cary member. And they were going into the city tax collector's office to handle just some regular old municipal business and was met with this gun registry. So they immediately knew creation of the firearms registry or a registry of gun owners in Florida is a felony. So he referred it he got with us, and we referred it to the local prosecutor, the state attorney. Amazingly, the state attorney came back and said, oh, well, it wasn't knowing willful because this person was unaware of the law. So you have a prosecutor refusing to prosecute a felony due to ignorance of the law by a city official. If it wasn't a city official, of course, no prosecutor would have just tried to sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
So our illustrious attorney general came in and is attempting to enforce the $5 million fine for creation of an illegal registry. The registry also in predicating entrance to a city building on adding yourself to this registry is a violation of our preemption law as well. In fact, the city of Jacksonville's response to the attorney general was that, well, we believe this should really be a preemption matter. Okay, game on. We'll be filing that lawsuit in days.
Excellent. I am, again, I think what you guys are doing there at Florida Carry to help hold these cities accountable is just tremendous. It should be a roadmap for other state level organizations to use these preemption laws. Now, again, Florida's preemption law, as you say, it could be stronger, but it is a lot stronger than a lot of other preemption laws that are already in place. And that, you know, is something that we need to be working on. I think around the country is gun control groups are trying to repeal preemption altogether. You know, this really is an area where we need to pay, I think, more attention. It's not as, you know, sexy perhaps as a gun or magazine ban, but if a locality can violate your rights, if you can live in a state where you might have to know the laws of 20 different municipalities as you're traveling across the state, that's a real easy way to have your rights infringed. So I really appreciate what you guys are doing. Love to have you back in the near future. And maybe next time we can talk about the Florida Senate and hopefully a new day for Second Amendment legislation there in Florida in the upcoming months.
Yeah, we certainly hope so. I mean, the attorneys are very busy. We have a hearing against the Florida Department of Law Enforcement coming up next week. Class action suit. If you've purchased a firearm in Florida since 2015 and you had a concealed carry license or an active law enforcement officer, they owe you your $5 per gun back. It was illegal for them to charge you that fee at the gun store. So we filed a lawsuit against that. Please sign up for the lawsuit. If you go to fdlelawsuit.com, it will ask you some questions. It's completely confidential and bring you to a retainer agreement to make you part of the class action suit.
All right.
So, there's a lot of bad actors who just refuse to act right from the top of government to the bottom, and we're holding them accountable every day.
Well, Sean, again, thanks so much for everything you do. Thanks for coming on the program today, and I look forward to doing this again very soon.
Pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet. Sean Carana joining us from Florida Carry here in Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks again to Sean for joining us on the program. I apologize, by the way, if I was a little distracted, and then you might have noticed me kept looking away. There was a hornet on the inside of my office door, and I was hoping that it would stay there and not fly this way. And yes, I have managed to get it out of the office, and it's enjoying the sunshine outside where he should be. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day. And our recidivist report, I wrote a little bit about this at Bearing Arms today. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson signing an executive order that is, we haven't seen the text yet. I don't think the text has been released, but it is basically done in partnership with the Brady campaign. And it is designed to put in new rules or policies for gun makers, ammunition makers who are hoping to do business with the city of Chicago. And once again, it's Mayor Johnson going after lawful gun owners, going after the firearms industry, instead of focusing on violent criminals, which is what the mayor should be doing because of stories like this from CWB Chicago. Man released early from 20-year sentence for attacking 94-year-old woman, charged with robbing, beating two more women. Yeah. You know, under Illinois' Safety Act, many individuals accused of violent offenses, even if they have a lengthy criminal history, they're able to be released on without with no bond whatsoever, just on their own recognizance. Separately, Illinois law gives essentially one day off your sentence for every day that you spend behind bars. So if you're sentenced to 10 years, you're going to do five. But you also get credit for time that you served either in jail or on electronic monitoring while you were awaiting trial. You know, I understand if you're behind bars for a year, you go to trial, fine. Knock that off your sentence. Electronic monitoring, I disagree with that completely. And I know we've talked about this before. You know, under the terms of some folks' electronic monitoring, they can be out of the home for like 18 hours a day. They can go to work. They can go to the grocery store. They're not incarcerated. And quite honestly, they're not being monitored that tightly either. So for them to be treated the same as somebody who's been in the Cook County Jail for the past year, I think that's absolutely asinine. And, you know, I'm a big fan of truth in sentencing laws. So I hate the fact that Illinois has no truth in sentencing. Basically, you just subtract 50% of that sentence, and that's what somebody is likely to end up doing. In this case, Olajuwon Claiborne, he's 36 years old. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison for attacking a 94-year-old woman during a home invasion back in 2016. He's now accused of attacking and robbing two more women in their 60s on the northwest side of Chicago. Because Claiborne only did about 8.5 years of that 20-year sentence. Tim Heckey, writing at CWB Chicago, says under Illinois sentencing laws, Claiborne's sentences would be reduced by 50% with good behavior, making him eligible for release after serving 10 years. However, the Illinois Department of Corrections records show that he was paroled after about 8.5 years, well short of that mark. It was not immediately clear what additional sentence credits allowed his earlier release. By the way, before the 2016 cases, Claiborne had already been convicted of two armed robberies in 2009 and then theft from a person in 2014. So he did less than 5 years for two armed robberies. Not the first time that Mr. Claiborne has benefited from the lax policies there in Illinois. The only thing I can think of is that Claiborne, again, also received credit for time spent behind bars awaiting trial after, again, he was accused of attacking a 94-year-old woman during a home invasion back in 2016. Anyway, he is now back behind bars. Judge Ravanda Doss Beal ordered Claiborne detained while the new cases proceed. He was paroled officially, I guess, on June 6th of last year after serving that 8.5 years of a 20-year sentence for a string of violent robberies that included the violent home invasion of the 94-year-old World War II veteran. In that case, by the way, he's alleged to have followed the woman to her home in December of 2016, then beating her, stealing her purse, and escaping in a stolen car. And again, the 20-year sentence turned out to be 8.5. That is what Mayor Johnson should be focused on. Now, again, I understand that if that's what Mayor Johnson was focused on, he probably wouldn't be mayor. Because I don't know that there are any tough-on-crime Democrats in Illinois. I wish there were, but Johnson isn't one of them, if there are any. I don't think there are any in the state legislature. There's certainly not one in the governor's office. Instead, you've got a bunch of politicians who, again, they would rather blame lawful gun owners for violent crime. They would rather blame gun industries for violent crime. Rather sue gun makers like Glock for violent crime. But when it comes to the actual violent criminals themselves, they're always looking for a way to cut them a break. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Huntsville, Alabama. Police say a deadly shooting at a Huntsville hotel was self-defense. The headline says identify the victim. No, they identified the person who was shot and killed, who was not the victim, because they were the aggressor in the incident. And we don't have a lot of information about this, unfortunately. According to the Huntsville police, this happened Monday night. 29-year-old was shot and killed at the Comfort Suites in Huntsville. Police identified the man as 29-year-old Patrick Aaron Blood, a Huntsville resident. Police say the shooting happened around 7:30 p.m., that a fight had occurred between Blood and another man who fired his gun. The man who fired the gun remained on the scene, spoke with detectives, and police determined that the person had fired in self-defense. Huntsville police said the findings were presented to the Madison County DA's office, which agreed with that determination. No criminal charges will be filed. the, you know, we've seen some of these investigations take over a year before the district attorney comes out and says, yeah, no charges are going to be filed. So for that determination to have been made in less than 24 hours, you're not just basing that decision on the testimony of the person who pulled the trigger, right? There was likely a video from the hotel, whether the incident took place in the parking lot or inside the building, maybe eyewitness accounts, but whatever it was, that evidence was compelling and clearly on the side of the armed citizen, since he has already been cleared by police and prosecutors there in Huntsville, Alabama. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man in Hot Springs, Arkansas, who was able to save the life of a child over the weekend. He was the hero. Man saved drowning child on Sunday at Lake Catherine. That's the headline from News 34 in Central Arkansas. Cheryl Vincent is the superintendent at Lake Catherine State Park. And she said that she received a report on Sunday afternoon of a snake bite down by the beach of this lake. So she said it was a little bit chaotic. There were a lot of noise. There were people screaming. So I walked over there. And that's when I noticed it wasn't a snake bite. It was a little girl who was out in the water. By the time Vincent got over to the scene, the girl was out of the water and was responsive, which was not the case just moments earlier. Vincent said the mom was paying attention to her other kid. She turned around. She didn't see her daughter. And then when she did see her, she noticed that she wasn't moving. And she was in the water. Immediately, she pulled her out of the water. She was screaming for help, that sort of thing. And that's why that's when the bystander, the park visitor, came. This good Samaritan, actually visiting from Louisiana, he had learned CPR for work, according to Vincent. She said, we have local first responders who are here almost immediately, but we didn't need it because someone stepped up to that role. She said, actually, implement that and save a life is pretty amazing. According to Vincent, he took complete control of the situation, cleared the scene, took charge of the scene, able to assess the little girl, gave her chest compressions. Vincent said, that saved her life. She went on to say he's a very humble man, didn't want any recognition for it. Not identified in the local media. The mother, very appreciative as well. Vincent said she was in shock, but very, very thankful that her daughter was okay, that we all are. And again, you know, I mean, what more can you say about this Good Samaritan who stepped up when circumstances required him to do so, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save a child's life? Wish I could praise him by name, but I understand it wasn't about the recognition. It was about doing the right thing in the moment. So whoever you are, visitor from Louisiana, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow as we wrap up the broadcast week, but not the work week. Of course, we've got you covered at bearingarms.com for all things Second Amendment, including that EO signed by Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. We also have gun control advocates in a bit of a snit in New Hampshire over the endorsement given by Giffords in the New Hampshire congressional race, NH1, First Congressional District. That was a fun story to write, I got to tell you. And we've got much more for you at Bearing Arms as well, so be sure to check out the website today, tomorrow as well. And in the meantime, we'll see you back here with another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company on Thursday. Have a great rest of your hump day Wednesday. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.